Again, Dave is going to be speaking on step 12, that is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Dave.
Thank you, Greg.
Cheers.
Well, hi everybody, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
And this is a little red book. I'm going to use it as my exclusive resource this evening, just so it drives Kevin nuts. Now, I have the good fortune of saying this is my last evening here, and my gratitude is unending. And I think I've mentioned this all along, I have been listening to other people. And I see Penny here tonight. I listen to Penny a lot. I actually listened to Penny today. She's much better at this than I am, and I'm grateful that she was able to instruct me a little bit today. But I've also listened to Leslie and that was great too, because she had great resources, and Helen and others. You know, who I didn't listen to was Kevin. Kevin's never done this, and I'm really surprised and a little bit disappointed. I don't know about the rest of you. Now, I had I'm sorry, there's no crosstalk in this meeting. I have the podium and the microphone. Please be quiet. This is a test. It's a real test. I mean, that is Kevin Clark. Can he be quiet? Well, thank God that he isn't. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I'm here exclusively because Kevin's asked me on a couple of occasions to do this, and I had good reasons not to say yes before. Some of it was just terror, I got to be honest with you, coming up here, you know, in my case, 9 weeks in a row, and trying to remember what I wanted to say and to make any sense of it was just a little bit nerve-wracking. But I can tell you that having almost finished this has really been kind of a cathartic circumstance. It really has been a journey through this. This made me rethink, or maybe not rethink, but at least research not only what has been written about these steps, which is voluminous. I mean, come on, there isn't a chance that I'm going to remember any part of that. But I can remember what they mean to me and how that information came to me. So that has been the overwhelming feeling about this, is that this has been a great experience. And it's mostly because I think that there's no real expectations. I mean, I could have got up here and spoke for 10 minutes and people would have still clapped. They would have. I mean, it's AA. They would have said, oh, nice job. And then I'd see people and they say, man, that was really powerful. And thinking, yeah, not so much. But thank you for saying so. But that's what I mean, AA is good for that. We take care of ourselves. We take care of each other. And even if that means a little white lies from time to time about whether or not I did or did not do a good job. Let me tell you, it's appreciated. It really is. It's appreciated. I don't think there's a counter on how many times people listen to your stuff there, but if there was, I'd go in and look. I'd probably go listen to myself regularly just to build my ego anyway. It has been a lot of fun, and you know what? This is a wonderful group of people. I say this with caution. You may be the best looking group of people I've ever seen in AA. The bar is pretty low, guys. I mean, but I mean, you are by and large the better looking group of people, and all doubt was dispelled when Chaz came in. So, and I have a history with Chaz. I've known Chaz since I was a little boy, and he wasn't so little. He's about 12 years older than me, but we grew up in the same town, in Venango, which is, you know, had more drunks per square inch than any place else in the United States of America. Actually, I think Bruce actually had relatives that lived there too. So he come down to partake every once in a while, and so and Chaz was my first sponsor, and the guy that introduced me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was He was a million years sober at the time. He was 5 years sober. And he did what he's supposed to do. He took me to meetings. He did the 12-step thing. He instructed me on what you're supposed to do. And what that meant was a lot of gasoline for him. Because he took me to a lot of meetings. And over the course of the first year, it's very likely that I was going to a meeting almost every day. If I missed a meeting, it was because of work-related issues. I didn't have a social life. I wasn't dating anybody. I was it was kind of an ugly time. But that's the gratitude that I feel for the people that I knew in the program when I first got here that carries on to today. You know, I've been sober for a little while now, and I still see Chaz come into the meetings, and he's 5 years sober or longer than I have. And that gives me the hope that I need, that I can get 5 more years out of this. I don't know about you, when I got here and someone said something about the 12th step, I thought, well, you know, I don't even know what the first one is, so let's not waste our time going all the way to 12. I did say, and I think I mentioned early on in my opportunity to speak here, that in that first time when I went to the rehab, I had a big book, and they handed it to me, and the one of the kids there, well, they weren't kids, but they were my age, and he said, here, you got a big blue pillow here. Take the big blue pillow, you know, because apparently you weren't supposed to read it. You were just supposed to lay your head on it. And I don't know if osmosis took care of the rest or not. It didn't. So I didn't really read the big book all that often. But when I got there, I struggled with the idea of even being an alcoholic, much less being somebody that was actually embracing recovery. It wasn't anything that I did. I come out, I was angry and frustrated, and I didn't mind AA. AA was fun in a lot of ways because people were kind. And I wasn't used to that. I don't know about the rest of you, but I wasn't used to being people actually shaking my hand. But in their defense, I didn't shake theirs either. It wasn't anything that I wasn't putting myself out there. The 12th step tells me I had to put myself out there. It says you have to be prepared, you know. It gives us direct instructions. It's, you know, I'm supposed to help other alcoholics to stay sober. I mean, it's really kind of straightforward. This is what you have to do. This is your job. I didn't do that well. It wasn't though I didn't want to be an AA. I just didn't want to be part of anything that was organized. You know? I wouldn't join the Rotary Club, for instance. You know, I wasn't good at joining things, and I couldn't join this either. And it showed. I was angry, and I was in the midst of all kinds of difficulties emotionally, you know, up and down. I'm no different than anybody else in here. Everybody has this thing. Everybody has this roller coaster that we ride on. And eventually we either get off of it or we leave altogether. I ended up in a dry drunk that lasted for a significant period of time because I didn't bother with any of the steps at that point. I just didn't. So the idea of the 12 steps seemed kind of remote and probably pretty hard to do. But like I was saying, I'm in rehab and they give me the big book. And in the big book, of course, in chapter 5, there's the steps. And I read the steps and I thought, well, I can do one of these a day. And 12 days I'll be able to be released from this godforsaken place that I was at. I made a mistake really early on in my recovery of saying something about it being like being in jail. And you know what? Guys that have been in jail said no, and don't ever say that again. So, and because they're bigger and stronger and meaner and had been in jail, I didn't say it again ever. I mean, most of the time guys in jail don't get snacks 3 times a day. I was surprised. I thought they should have, but nevertheless, I fought against this the way that I shouldn't have. It just made it harder in the end, and I'm not unique in that regard. Lots and lots of people didn't grasp hold of this thing and think, oh, this is just like, you know, barn dance, and I can hardly wait to do it again. You know, I just didn't want to join. And so you can't pass anything on if you're not joined to it. If you're not part of it, and that's me, not you, obviously, but there's no way of... What am I going to say to somebody in the midst of having 11 years of sobriety and being in a full-scale dry drunk? What principles am I actually going to carry forward? It's not like I hadn't gone through the steps at that point. It was something that I did, but was I wasn't living them as it was instructed. And it's pretty standard that you go from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 and so forth. And at some point, the light bulb comes on. And I used to get mad about the light bulb coming on for other people. Oh yeah, man, that was disappointing to me because I was nowhere near that. And so I thought they were cheating somehow. I don't know. You know, when you get here and you're here for the first month and you go to nothing but speaker meetings and all, and if they got new speakers and they're talking about their drinking the history and you're sitting there going, Jesus, I need a drink really, really bad. I mean, that's what I was struggling with. I just couldn't get past the really fundamental issues of what my life was before and what it now was going to have to be. I couldn't get there. It was a road too long. But obviously, I'm here. That's the grace of God. That's the providential part of this program. That's the part that I spoke about last week when we finally come to that 11th step. That means we did the first 10, and we have a spiritual program, and we have a connection and a conscious connection with a power greater than ourselves that's going to bring us forward. And then I can do the 12th step. I can actually be part of the 12th step. I will tell you that in my earliest days, they were still doing kind of, and I don't do this much anymore, 12-stepping people. You don't hear about people, because most people are driven down to the rehab, down to the detox. And that's where the 12-stepping goes on. And that's not to say it doesn't happen. But frankly, in my earliest days here, they were still doing some of that, but frankly, not much. And I wouldn't have been prepared for it anyway, frankly. I really wasn't. I was way too paranoid. Go to somebody's house at 2 in the morning, are you kidding me? people have guns in this country, you know? And by the time that the phone service gets a hold of you and sends you there, and the person's either I drank a lot more or got started to sober up and really, really didn't want to see you in their home, was also a little bit nerve-wracking to me. And frankly, I didn't do it. I was not one of those guys. I don't know that I just didn't make myself available, quite honestly. I don't think they were doing much. Everybody's going to rehabs. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, it's part of what we are now. The 12th step is not the same as it was. But you know what? AA is, you know, I've said this before, this is a dynamic system. And dynamic systems mean that things don't stay static. If things stay static, then they die on the vine. That's all there is to it. If we're not moving forward, if I'm not moving forward in my recovery, then I'm regressing in my recovery. It's as thin as a dime. I'm either going one or the other. I'm either stepping forward in my recovery and remaining active, or I'm going backwards. There's no sitting still for this. And that's what AA means to me. And that's what that 12th step means to me. It means that I have to continue to reinvent what I have to do to be purposeful and successful with helping people and providing service to the group on a regular basis and do it the way that I've been instructed to do. And I've had a lot of instructors. You know, there's a lot of them right in this room. Every guy that I've ever sponsored is one of my instructors. Everyone. Every person who I've heard their leads time and again are my instructors. The guys who have sponsored me are my instructors. And I hope that I was theirs. That's how this works. One drunk talking to another. I said last week, and I mean this, you know, the idea that we're sitting here, and I've had the opportunity to do this for 9 weeks, and graciously had people listen to me. It's really, really a wonderful feeling. And this all started with two guys in a carriage house on Cyberlean Estate in Akron, Ohio. And probably everybody or most everybody's been there. And you know what I'm talking about. You walk in there and you think, it's just so small. It just looks so small, you know. When you think about AA, you think about international. You think this burgeoning thing you're looking about. They're talking about a gigantic process. Started with two guys sitting around who didn't know how to stay sober by themselves. And by the way, Bill was 6 months sober. Bill got sober after Armistice Day, I think December 12th. I think Bill's sobriety date was December 12th, 1934. So by the time he talked to Bob, which would have been May whatever, Mother's Day of 1935, he had about 6 months sober, or just over 6 months sober. He hadn't been able to keep anybody sober except Bill. Bill stayed sober. He was his own 12-step work. Pretty remarkable. You can stay sober just by doing the right thing, trying to help another alcoholic. So the germ of this thing is just fascinating to me. Because every time I'm talking to a guy in my little building and we're talking about the steps one way or another, and I said, listen, this all started, you know, about 120 miles away from this, maybe not even that far. I said, and these two guys, both of them, you know, Bill was young, he was 39 years old. Bill was the old guy, he was 50. Got together because, you know, they couldn't keep sober themselves. Bill had been doing a good job. Stayed sober for 6 months. Pretty close to losing it to Mayflower, wasn't he? Pretty close to losing it there. And by the grace of God, and that's it. Reverend Tunks took him down the path, and he ended up with Henrietta Cyberline. And Henrietta Cyberline says, man, I got the perfect candidate for this. Bob Smith is a drunken idiot. And he's been coming to our group and the Oxford group, and he's not doing well. So he was well loved, by the way. Bob Smith was well loved and well respected. But everybody and their brother knew he was a drunk. Except Bob. He didn't think so much. But and you know what the deal was? He left there and he told his wife Ann, I'm gonna spend 15 minutes with this guy, that's tops, because he had some drinking to do and he didn't feel too good because he'd been drunk the day before. And so Bill doesn't know this guy from Adam. He doesn't know him from a bag of hammers. He's just going to meet the next guy that's going to keep him sober, because Bill's got to go back to New York. He's got no money, he's got no prospects, he's just hanging out, and he's going to sit there and he's going to talk to this guy who he's never met in his entire life. But that's not unusual. Bill had been talking to guys for 6 months. By the way, he had no problem talking. He was kind of like Kevin Clark. He would not shut up. And then he wrote the little red book, which he did not. But here we are. Here we are. Bill hanging out waiting for Bob to show up in this little room. Little. And remember, Henrietta Cyberline had three kids. I don't know where they were at. Someplace there. And then both Ann and Henrietta would have been there. So there's a crowd in this little house. And of course, everybody who's been there knows that right behind there is the Cyberline mansion. It's not called that anymore. But it had, the bathrooms there were bigger there than the carriage house. I got to be honest with you. Remarkable property. Just remarkable. But here's these two guys, both of them kind of middle-aged, sitting almost knee to knee, because they're both kind of tall guys, sitting in these chairs facing each other, having a conversation that impact on every one of our lives. Every one of them. From 88 years ago, damn near, 88 years ago, here we sit talking about the 12th step, because that's what they were doing right then. That's what was going on. Bill was 12th stepping Bob, and boy, he needed it. He really needed it. Boy, Bob really wanted it too. And unlike some of the folks that we meet coming in and out of this program, they didn't want it so much, including old Dave here. I wasn't that keen on being sober. And mostly I didn't want to join you as a group because, well, I liked you, but you might ask me to do something. And that was disconcerting because I had spent a lifetime avoiding responsibility. Trust me, I was good at it. So the story of Bill and Bob, which you all know, but I just gave to you again anyway, is just fascinating to me. It sets the stage for all the steps, 1 through 12, but really, that's what Bill got to do that night. He got the 12-step Bob. Bill had been 12-step by Ebby. So Bill didn't care if Ebby kept talking. Remember, more booze for him. Remember. Because he had enough to give Ebby, but he didn't really want to give it to him. Because he's a good drunk, and he had, that was mine. And he was hopelessly drunk. Until he wasn't. Until he had what we all have to have, is a spiritual awakening. It's all there. Now, It starts with the very first step, doesn't it? It tells us we're powerless. And I keep going back to that. I've gone back to it several times in these weeks because it is that powerful to me. If I don't understand, if I don't know and that I am powerless, then that's the first bad step that I'm taking. I'm stepping away from step two. I'm stepping sideways. I'm stepping backwards. I'm not progressing. I am not moving forward. So I have to know that I'm powerless. I have to live in that powerlessness. And when I heard Barb Lee say that. Barb Lee's the one that I heard that in a meeting. I understood the process, but when she mentioned that one time in the Promises meeting and she talked about sitting in the powerlessness, it was like a light went on in my head. I get it. You have to stay there the whole time. You never get to leave there. When it finally occurred to me, when somebody said, well, you have to do the first step every day, it finally meant something to me. It meant that I had to be and remain powerless. It didn't mean I had to be unmanageable. Honestly, listen, that unmanageable part of it's kind of a throwaway. We were all unmanageable, right? I mean, it wasn't like anybody in here. Well, you know, I might have been powerless, but I'm fully manageable and managing my life. Now, that wasn't happening. So I always think about it, it's certainly part of the first step. It's certainly part of my recovery. But I didn't worry about unmanageability after I'd been sober for a length of time and I understood the next step. I didn't. But powerlessness, that's elusive. That's elusive. I didn't want to be powerless. I don't know about the rest of you. And it meant to me that I might end up being the hole in the donut. And they talk about that. I didn't want that either. I wanted to count for something. You know, it says in our book somewhere about being a friend among friends and so on and so forth. And that usually comes as a direct result of doing this program correctly. But I wanted all that without it. It's like I said last week, I wanted justice for everybody and I wanted mercy for me. Just that little bit more. Just that little bit more. Now, could I carry this message to someone else? That was the question, right? I mean, I saw and I knew and I could understand what those first 11 steps were telling me to do. Prepare yourself to do that 12th one. Did I have a spiritual awakening? Slow, but yes. The longer I stay sober, the more I recognize the spiritual awakenings that I've had. Ones I didn't give credit to. That I have a mountaintop Bill Wilson thing? Nope. I appreciate the people that do. I really do. Somebody told me that happened to them, and I thought, yeah, well, I immediately got jealous. I wasn't mad about it. I immediately got jealous, and I thought, oh, crap. You know? But I don't regret a single day of recovery. I regret some of the stupid crap that I've done in recovery. I've regret and made amends for things. But I don't regret getting sober. But that wasn't always the case. But it is now. And that's what counts. Today is what counts. What I was, I can have back. But I don't want that. I want to know what's next. That's what I want to know. And I can only do that by connecting myself with other human beings. I have to. I can't do this by myself. I mean, it says in our book repeatedly, self-knowledge gave us, you know, provided us nothing. Self-reliance was not good. You know, I don't know how many times he had to say self, but basically enough that, you know, how Bill wrote, he told you 1,000 times the same thing. Apparently we needed to hear that. But self-reliance and self-knowledge was not going to get me sober, nor was it going to keep me sober. But you might. You might. And boy, how old did I lean into that? I didn't know I was leaning into it. But I'll tell you, when they said, well, it's people, places, and things, frankly, there were no people. I knew a lot of people. I was friendly with a lot of people. I am generally a cordial human being. But I didn't have any friends. Not to speak of. People who knew me to be friendly knew better than to ask me to do something because the answer was always no. And generally it wasn't even that. I just ignored it. Because I couldn't bring myself to join with people to do anything. This was a struggle for me, folks. This was hard for me. When I got to step 12 and I finally recognized that I was responsible for carrying this message, it scared me to death. all of a sudden fear came back into the equation, because I didn't know if I could do that. When somebody finally asked me to sponsor him, I thought, oh my God, I don't know that I can do that. I struggled with it. And so, because the guy that asked me very badly wanted to be sober, he kind of guided me. And that's the deal. It's one drunk talking to another. And we were all done with the steps that we had done, because that's what we did. We went to the big book and we went through the steps. He said, man, you did a great job. I'm thinking, no, but you did. And so the fear of that then left me. Because I knew that even if I didn't have the answers, somebody did. Somebody did. I could ask all kinds of people. And I can read it, by the way. There's a lot of things to read. There's a lot of things to study. I've learned, if nothing else, over the course of the last 9-10 weeks, that there's a lot of things to read, including the little red book. That although it's not AA related, it has some good stuff in it. And honestly, it's not all that good. But it's not the 12 and 12, and it's not the big book. And it's not some of the other things that are AA sanctioned, or even things that are not. But I can read a lot of those. And I'll tell you what, guess who told us to do that? Bill Wilson. He says there's libraries full of things for you to read. And he was talking about spirituality. He was talking about praying and meditation. Go find out. Ask people. Ask people who are not in this program. Just the other day, there's a person I know fairly well in this program, and they're just really struggling, and they're not new in the program. And I struggled. And so I'm sensitive to people not. So I was forthright about it. I said, do you mind telling me what it is? Because I don't want to get in people's business that don't want me in their business. But it's AA, so I can at least ask. And the person said, yeah, I feel lost. I feel disconnected. I feel anxious. And I said, well, listen, what you're experiencing, if it's anything like what I went through, is generalized depression and anxiety. Which, by the way, both of our founders had. So you're on good grounds. And if 90% of the people in here can't shake their heads up and down, you're all lying. Because I don't know anybody in substance abuse circles that don't suffer from some small or even large depression and generalized anxiety. It's just part of the deal. And what I said to this person was, listen, AA can't solve your problems. It can really make a dent in how you live a life. But what you carried forward from whatever trauma you might have had in your lifetime, AA can't do anything about it. And the founders would tell you, use outside help. Get help. I've sent I don't know how many people to therapy because that's what they needed. Because life was leaking out of them. You know, the trauma, the grief, you know, the absolute anger, frustration, all that stuff been stuffed down and stuffed down and stuffed down. Don't act like that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Finally manifests itself someplace. It's generally in anxiety and depression, and it just leaks out of people. Now, I said, here is what I would suggest. Go to therapy, stay in AA, and be mindful that no matter how this looks right now, it's probably the best thing that could happen to you. You are going to grow as a result of this, not fail. Now, I would tell anybody that because somebody told me that. And I've said it in here. I went to therapy and the therapist said, well, I think you ought to go back to AA. And I said, well, that's a bad idea. And she said, no, today. Oh, and you know, she was right. She was right. And so I camp on that because I know that it's the thing that helps. It reconnected to me the things that I can no longer control that I couldn't do in AA exclusively. But what I did when I came back to AA and was able to put all that stuff back together was a rejuvenation and a revigoration of life of recovery. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All of it started to make sense. The light I'd seen in so many other eyes, you know, I was getting the idea. I could now share with people truthfully and honestly. I could do a fourth and fifth step that didn't hedge, because I was a good hedger. I didn't embellish as much. I didn't lie as much. I didn't, you know, I actually gainfully tried to do the right things. I wasn't as snide as much. I wasn't, so many things were better because I got there, because it made sense to me finally. But I had to work through the process like everybody else does. The 12th step is a remarkable step. It brings us all forward. If you go to the 12 and 12, and in the first part of the, and it used to drive me nuts because it's a long chapter, and if you're in a 12 and 12 meeting, it takes forever to read it, you know, like, and then if somebody's not a fast reader, you're going, come on! And, you know, so not that that ever frustrated me, but it talks, you know, it takes up the first 5 pages talking about the first through the 11th step. And he says, then this is what we do in that step, and this is what we do in that step. And I thought, the first couple of times that we're going through this, it's 12 and 12, it's down Hightown. If you've ever been to Hightown outside of Titusville, they had a great 12 and 12 meeting down there on Sunday mornings. It was a great meeting. And I remember going thinking, man, this 11th step is going to drive me nuts. And I don't want to talk about the 11th step next week, or 12th step. I want to talk about the first step next week. Took forever to read. And it made sense. Then when I got here the second time, when I actually got here and stayed here, that's when it all made sense. I can't thank, I don't know how to express the gratitude that I have for this program. I've said it before, I'll say it again. My life was saved by this program. I get done listening to people today. I'm sitting there and my dog, and I'd been living to listen to people do the 12th step, and out of nowhere, I start to weep because it was that powerful to me. Now, I'm not a crier necessarily. I think I'm sensitive enough, but I just come out of nowhere. And that's the hand of God. That's the hand of God. I don't know how else to explain that. And every single one of you carries that light with you. And every single one of you is part of the light that I need to take the light on with me. Every single one of you. But years ago, I used to do this when I'd finished my lead, and it kind of lost its... I'll tell you. I was watching a TV show, and this was a long time ago. Phil Donahue, some of you folks will remember Phil Donahue. There's a lot of grayer heads in here. They're all going, yeah, I remember Phil Donahue. And Phil Donahue was the precursor to some of the other crazy things. He wasn't Maury Povich. He actually had a very kind of calm, he always had a subject matter, of course. And the subject matter this time was people who had survived a suicide attempt. Now, I had been suicidal. Now, this is before I sobered up. So I'm still suffering that spiraling down and down and down and dark, you know, the dark thoughts and all the other things that go with being a daily drunk. And I don't know why I'm watching Phil Donahue, because it was on at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm guessing I was sick that day, but that was his subject matter. And he had 3 people on the dais, and they were asking, and finally, he's running around. And you remember, Phil used to run around, he had that microphone, it was about that long, and he poking people's face, and they'd have to answer the question. And the guy said, they got to somebody, and they said, what's your question? And he looks up and he says to the one guy who had jumped off a bridge, and he said, when did you know you wanted to live? And he said, when I let go. Now, that has always resonated with me in this program. I wanted to live when I finally let go. When I finally let in the light that's brought by each of you into this program. Through 88 years of history, the love and tolerance, the compassion, the passion, the just the absolute feeling of connectedness that we all bring to one another is something that I can never, ever be thankful enough for. I can't. It is the best thing. And here I'm going to finish up. I honest God, I won't go any further. Because this is like the two-hour step, wasn't it? I mean, it really is. I mean, we can all talk about this because it's all so powerful to each and every one of us. If we got here and we stayed here, this 12th step is just remarkable because it gives us our marching orders, you know. Dr. Bob, you know, trust God, clean house, help others. They ask him how he would describe the AA program. He was a man of spare words, unlike Bill. That's what it was. How powerful is that? And it comes across the years, and it resonates with us all to this day. My responsibility to you is to help. That's it. Stay out of your way and help. And only by the grace of God am I able to do that. Now, I said before, and I paraphrased General Winters in the Band of Brothers when he says, my grandson said to me, "Were you a hero in the war, Grandpa?" And Grandpa said, "No, but I served with a group of heroes, you know." So there's miracles here. So am I a miracle? I don't know, but I'm in a room full of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Is this on? Does anybody hear me? Okay. So now if you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get you the microphone.
Paige, alcoholic.
Hey, Paige. Hey,
I'm sitting here trying to figure out what it would be like to go through a dry drunk for 11 years. So here I have two questions. Number one, how did you not pick up or want to kill yourself or somebody else during those 11 years?
How do you know I didn't? I could have killed three or four people. I didn't, but go ahead.
And two, what made you finally surrender?
Well, okay. First of all, the dry drunk was only about 6 years. I was 11 years sober, but I had gone to meetings pretty faithfully up to 5 years. And then I just didn't. Now, here's the only reason that I didn't pick up a drink. I was scared, number one. I knew that what was waiting for me. And I didn't want to lose my job. I would have lost my job. But those were secondary issues, to be honest with you. I would go to AA meetings until I felt better. I'd show up for 2 weeks. And I'd think, hey, I feel pretty good. And then I'd quit going. Yeah, no, I know you're thinking, 2 and 2 is still 4, Dave. I was not putting that together. I was not. What happened was I melted down emotionally. I was in a new job. I was separated from my second wife. I was just overwhelmed. And I had a psychologist who worked for me say, you need therapy. You need help. And I wasn't against therapy. I didn't think about it. I thought, no, I don't know that. Yeah. That's when I showed up. I melted down. I was afraid. I wouldn't open the door. It was just like being drunk again without the alcohol. I didn't want to answer the phone. I didn't want to pick up my mail. I didn't want to answer the door. Nothing. And I didn't want to do anything for anybody else either. Just leave me alone. No, it's like a kid. I was in my head. I was 12. You know, I was stamping my feet like I was prepubescent, you know, only by someone else showing me the way, only by someone taking my hand and saying, you got to go back. You got to go to therapy. And the therapist say, hey, you have to go to AA. Did I get there? And when I got there, Chaz was still there, you know, and guys that I knew and loved from my very earliest days on. I stayed. And then the things happened. And then the miracle actually did happen, Paige. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Dave.
Who has the next question for Dave?
Well, first of all, I had to write notes because I can't remember.
Well, yeah. Go figure that.
Yeah. So you said the word that's been my word for the month, some of the ladies here will be like, oh my gosh, she's not going to say Providence again. Yes, because you did.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for reminding me that, you know, we have a tendency to think of that as a coincidence.
No.
And I love the way that you inserted that in your talk. And you talked about God's grace, mm-hmm. you know, during those 6 years, like, how do we end up, right?
Right.
So I want to give an example of grace. Mary Ann's here. She was my first sponsor. You was talking about 12-stepping people
mm-hmm.
and actually going to their home. And Mary Ann took me to somebody's home. I have no idea whose house it was, where we were. But Mary Ann did nothing. There was no judgment.
No.
There was there was only pure love. And what she did is she made a couple eggs for this woman because she probably hadn't eaten in a week. You remember that? You took me and you made eggs for that woman. That meant so much. It's like, oh, that's how we love on one another, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we do. Sometimes there's no words, it's just action.
Yeah.
So my question to you after all of that is that what do you tell a sponsee that says, I have nothing to offer and that's why I don't want to sponsor?
I tell them the whole story, Penny. I can only tell them what I know, mm-hmm. what I experienced, and I start at ground zero and say, yeah, wait a minute, let me tell you a story.
Mm.
Now, I don't usually make it 45 minutes long, but I get to the point that says, everybody has something to offer. Everybody has something to offer. And you may not be able to sponsor, I don't mean you, of course, but I mean anybody, may not feel like that's their calling. But you can show up in the meeting, you can chair the meeting, you can do, there's so many other things to do. I'd say clean ashtrays, but God, I'm so glad we don't do that anymore. Wow, was that ever dirty, wasn't
that was
it?
A dirty
yeah,
job.
That was a dirty job. But,
and the other thing that you mentioned also was that how you sometimes felt like you're being sponsored, like it's a bad
thing. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And how many times do you most often have the experience of working with younger people than us? You know, when the new in the program, that fire, do you ever like get that, absorb that, remember what
Hell
it's
yeah.
like to have the fire, although your fire didn't start till you're 7.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's the beauty of this program. I mean, one drunk talking to another drunk and when the lights turn on and you go, wow, this is great. You know, yeah, I bask in that all the time. Well, as much as I can. I really haven't sponsored anybody new for a while. But you know what happens is that when you're available, you know, God provides, and that'll probably happen. If not, I'll go say, hey, you want a sponsor. And I did do that just recently, and the guy said, no thanks. I was okay with that. I was okay with that. Here's what I've discovered at getting this particular age. If you're going to approach somebody much younger, you know, you've got to be a little more, I don't know, a little more worldly than I am, you know, maybe a little cooler than I am. I don't know. But I know that your husband does this all the time. He, and I appreciate him for that. And he says he's got a new wobbly. And I just love that. I love that terminology, you know. But, you know, we offer what we can. And I think that I'm available for people. And if I let people know that I'm available, I think, and by the way, Penny, thank you. I've listened to almost all of yours. Just because you did such a wonderful job. Not that others didn't. Clearly, I listened to yours today. And so some of the things that you said, I said tonight. I mean, part of that was, I don't know if the providential part was, maybe it was. I don't know. Maybe it was. So anyway, thank you. Thank you for the question. Thank you for the comment. Get Gretchen. Hey, by the way, I want to say how proud I am of Cindy and Mary Ann, and for that matter, Gretchen, for actually not talking all the way through. So.
It was hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you notice they were talking behind my back?
I did notice that. And thank you, Mary Ann. Not much you can do for those women, is there? No.
I've tried.
I know you have.
Gretchen, alcoholic. So I found in this little red book.
Atta girl.
And I was actually initially going to go down the path that Penny did, but since she did that, although I did find one of the things interesting that I'll just share, one of the ways to be of service.
Yeah.
making calls with older members who are sponsoring a new member.
Yeah.
Something to think about. Yeah. But here is my question, because you talked a lot about the spiritual aspect of all the 12 steps, but most importantly, this last one. Are you able to identify or recognize when was it you had that spiritual awakening that you were able to then carry this message on to other alcoholics?
Sure. It happened. Well, I had spiritual awakenings prior to my period of dry. I had several things happen to me in the midst of AA meetings when I was going to them every day. And so I was experiencing things that I had never experienced before. And I can tell you, in the second year I was sober, I had a remarkable experience that occurred to me and went, oh, okay, this is what it's about. This is the connectivity that they talk about. This is serenity. You know, I've mentioned this before, you know, as soon as I took credit for it, it went away. So it's the thing I've been chasing for a lot of years. But moreover, when I finally become of use, I guess, it was well after my dry period, and after I returned to the program in the kind of way that I needed to come, which was every day. I was not one of those guys. I just was not one of those guys who could take a week off. I had proven that to myself 1,000 times over. And then I could say that within that 1 year, between 12 and 13, I started to have a deeper appreciation for what was going on. So slow. It is seeping into me. It is making me understand. And now I'm attuned to what people were saying about spiritual experiences. And then I can point and say, oh, okay, that happened to me. And I'll tell you a little story. I was at the Cambridge Springs meeting that started Monday, and this is years ago. I don't even know if the meeting is still going on, but Helen used to come down to it. And she's sitting there one night, and it was after the meeting, and she's speaking to Doug Ryan, and she's crying. And I love Helen. I hope that she's okay. No, what she was experiencing was a spiritual connection. What she was experiencing was what I was talking about before. Being overwhelmed to the extent that crying is the only way it comes out. And I thought, she's like 3.5 years older than me in this program. And I thought, oh, shit, man. When I'm 17 years sober, which she was then, this is what I'm looking forward to. That's what I want. I want to be emotionally invested in my recovery. and that's what I want out of it. So thank you. Thank you very much, Gretchen. And thank you for all your questions through this thing. I do appreciate that. And you too, Paige. You guys always had questions and good ones, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
I think that does it,
Dave.
Oh, Dave.
Gosh, we're done. Hey, thank you very much.